So we get this messaging that if we are quote unquote unhinged or uncontrollable in our emotions, we're not a healthy person. And I think that it kind of stems from childhood, that shame that goes along with if we get hurt or upset, if we lose a soccer game or a basketball game, and the messaging we're getting from our parents or our coaches, hey, suck it up. Then all of a sudden we learn, because we're not able to filter at that time, we learn, oh, I can't be upset.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring. My guest today, Mary Hyatt, is a life and business coach. And what I loved most about the conversation that we had was truly understanding how, as women, we can harness the power of our emotions in the work that we do as parents, as entrepreneurs, and as go-getters in this world. Mary shares her own personal story of how her own repression of emotions and the moment she decided to change her relationship with them, the impact that it had on her health and her business and her impact moving forward. Mary's words are profound. Her insight is incredible. And it is truly my pleasure to introduce you to Mary Hyatt. Mary Hyatt, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Hey, girl. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, I'm really looking forward to this conversation. And, you know, before we jumped on, I spent a little bit more time on your website and like really getting to know you. And one of the overarching things that just sort of struck me, and I want to make sure that we unpack today, is this idea of not playing small and this idea of playing a bigger game. And so we've got a lot of different pieces to unpack. We're going to talk about emotions. We're going to talk about leaning into them. It's such an interesting time. And I think for so many of us, we're experiencing emotions in a new way. But before we jump into that, I'd love for you to share a little bit about your story, how you got to where you are in your career. And then we're going to dive into some really cool concepts.
Yeah. Well, it is. It's like, I'm so excited for this conversation because I feel like it could not be more relevant right now to be having it. And, you know, for me, if we rewind the clock, I don't know, gosh, I think it's been about 8 years now, I would say. I was living a very different life than I'm living right now. And for me, I was in a position where I got married really young. So I'm from Nashville, Tennessee. So for all my Southerners out there, you know, hey, y'all, you're going to know what I'm talking about here. But it's like, we got the message for women as a young, young little girl that the kind of pride of a woman is to get married young and have babies. And that's kind of the mark of a good woman. And so for me, I am a 2 on the Enneagram. If you're familiar with that, I'm a pleaser. I'm a recovering people pleaser. And so I'm a middle child. And I wanted to kind of play by the rules and go about life in the way that was expected of me. And so I got married at 20. And very shortly after that, was in a situation with my husband at the time where we ended up being caretakers of our nephew who was diagnosed with neuroblastoma cancer at the age of 2. And we were his primary caretakers for 2 years before he passed. And this was 6 months after we got married. And so, as you can imagine, a sweet little 20-something-year-old, newly married, doesn't have a clue about life, doesn't really understand how to process, how to deal, doesn't have the skill set to be able to work through just the trauma of that. I sort of went on this cascading adventure of shutting down and really shutting off life to myself. And so I was struggling with just horrific anxiety, panic attacks, depression. I was about 80 pounds heavier than I am now. So I gained a lot of weight. I was definitely using food to cope. I had endometriosis. I was in a lot of physical pain. And all of that, and this is kind of a fundamental belief that I have, was stemming from this undealt with emotional stuff that was going on in my life. And it was showing up through my body. It was showing up through this sort of extreme place of emotional just heartache. And so it kind of got to the point where for me, I had to have what we call in the South, like a come to Jesus moment. And that is sort of like where you look your stuff in the face and you get real honest. And I had that moment. I can remember it so distinctly. I remember looking in the mirror and recognizing only my eyes when I looked in the mirror. It was like, who is this? Who is this body? What happened? And I had to make a decision. And it ended up being a series of multiple decisions. But in that moment, I had to make the decision to commit to living a life that hopefully, you know, it was like all in faith, that hopefully would be more than what I was currently living. Like, I had to take that leap of faith to trust that there was more to life than where I was at age 26. And so I kind of went on this journey of embarking on self-discovery and self-development, and kind of fast forward, ended up becoming a life coach and now get to coach women kind of through this whole process. But it was a hard journey of, you know, really looking at things that I had buried really, really deeply. It was challenging a lot of those beliefs that I had been taught and told, and really got to the point where I had to answer the question, who am I really? Like, if I wasn't playing by the rules that my family or society or the South was giving me, who am I really? And so it was a several year journey. And I mean, let's be honest, we'll probably never finish it. You know, we're probably are always on that journey. But yeah, so that's kind of a little bit of backstory about kind of where I came from and how I got to where I am now.
What I really heard in that story and in your sharing there as well is that, you know, all of these things were going on, which I can only imagine were tremendously difficult, but where everything changed was actually in just making a decision.
Yeah. You know,
that was really powerful. Sorry, I don't want to cut you off. Please go.
No. I was just going to say that was really poignant for me too in my own life, because I remember I was working with a therapist about this, and I'd be journaling, and I'm like, when is it going to shift? You know, like, when am I actually going to get to the other side of this? And in particular, at that time, I was talking about my body, and I was really trying to look at how can I become healthier? How can I work through what's going on? And I remember her words so clearly, and she said, Mary, she said, you have to just do it. And it was like a light bulb went off in my mind of like, here I was for years, honestly, like ruminating, right? Like that emotional rumination of going over what had happened and going over the grief of everything and going over what I didn't want to happen. And I was ruminating. I was like playing this tape on repeat in my mind over and over and over again. But it wasn't until I made that decision to just do it. That, and I know that sounds like so simple. I mean, it took a lot to get me to that place, but it was like, at some point I've got to decide to put the tennis shoes on. At some point I had to decide to go to a retreat or to purchase the book or whatever it might be to actually take action. And man, at that moment, when I created that commitment between myself and myself, it was like, that's when everything started to shift and change.
Yeah, and I totally hear that. And what's interesting behind that is that, you know, in speaking with women and working with women on their health, one of the, and just in general in society, what I'm hearing a lot of right now is a lot of people being in a headspace where they're like, it's not my fault. And that's okay. And we can acknowledge that piece. And I'm particularly sensitive to that phrase right now because I have three young kids at home because school's not happening. And I hear them say, it's not my fault 10 times a day. And we consistently pull the conversation forward from that. And so we can acknowledge that piece, but being in a state of it's not my fault also leaves you stuck in a state, because it's not my fault also confers a decision of I'm also not going to take responsibility for it. And one thing I'm talking to my kids about so much right now is that many things in life are going to happen that are not your fault. but it doesn't mean that you don't take responsibility for them. And I feel like step one of taking radical responsibility for your life, which is a term we use here on this podcast.
Yeah.
Is the step one is a decision that I, regardless of whose fault it is, I'm going to take control of the path moving forward. Yes. And so, you know, I feel like it was like this mic drop moment when you're like, I just made this decision. And I was like, guys, sometimes it's as simple as just making the decision.
Yeah. And you know, what I think is important about that too, is like the fact of the matter is we can choose to make the decision and still be in deep grief or offer ourselves a lot of compassion or empathy. Like, it's not that we kind of like shut off the emotional thing and just pretend like this isn't happening to me, or this wasn't hard, or this isn't challenging. I think there's a beautiful place where we can kind of hold both, where it's like, you know what? It's not my fault. I didn't do this. Or, you know, when we kind of be in that place where it's like, this really was real. Like, this actually happened. Like, I think about the things that have been traumatic in my life. Those were real. Those things happened. But I think there's so much beauty when we can say, this is true. Yes, this is hard. Yes, this is agonizing. Yes, this is unfair, whatever it might be. And I can also choose how I respond to that and choose how I interpret that in a way that is empowering to myself versus disempowering. And once I sort of got that concept of like, oh, I'm in control of the narrative here. I'm in control of how I'm writing the story of my life. And I don't want to be the victim of my own story. Like, I believe me, I played that so, so long from a place of true, like, unconsciousness. I mean, it wasn't like I was considering that as an option and deciding that. It was like, it felt at the time like it was the only option. Like, this is really hard. I struggle with anxiety. I have endometriosis. Like, all those things were real. And it was like, by affirming that every time I spoke to it, this is who I am, when I attached it to my identity, you know, like, this is me. I'm a person who has anxiety. I'm a person who struggles with endometriosis. These horrible things happen to me. That's disempowering. All of a sudden, I can't be anything other than somebody who's sick, anxious, and depressed. And so I think what's amazing is, yes, I am experiencing anxiety. Yes, I am experiencing depression. Yes, I am sad. Yes, I am lonely. Yes, I am grieving, whatever that might be. And I also have the power to begin to shift that, to choose how to move through that and get to the other side. And so that to me is like, oh my gosh, such a powerful place to be when we can hold both of things together. It's hard and I can shift.
So what happened to those physical and emotional manifestations when you started to own where you are at and engage in a pathway that was more empowering to you?
Well, it's amazing. I mean, it went away. I mean, everything. It was like, it was fascinating to watch. I felt like I was like doing this own study on myself, you know, because I was like reading all these books and I'm thinking, okay, every book that I'm reading, whether it's about the body or it's about the mind, are kind of essentially saying the same thing. Like, I have control over what I'm thinking. I have control over how I'm choosing to identify myself. And that has an effect on my physical body, the chemistry of my body. So for me, what was so fascinating is I made this agreement with myself, because like, I got really into holistic health. And part of what became part of my story in that was, I have endometriosis. So I would say that like over and over again. Like, that was part of just like, oh, this is who I am. This is what I struggle with. And I made this commitment after I had read several things about sort of our words having power over our reality, over our physical bodies. And I thought, you know what? Today I do have endometriosis, but I'm going to stop using that as a qualifier to describe who I am. I'm going to literally stop introducing myself as a woman with endometriosis or who struggles with it. And so I like went on a real like mental diet of making sure that those words did not come out of my mouth, making sure that I didn't say I have endometriosis, because I started to learn every time I say this, I'm basically like anchoring this into my body as truth. And so how could my body not have endometriosis if I kept saying I've got it? Like, there was no chance that that could shift or that could change. So I changed my language. I changed how I was defining who I am. And the beautiful thing is my body healed. Like, I mean, I do not struggle with that anymore. My hormones, I just got my blood work back. I kind of do it every couple of years, but this is, I mean, I've been in remission of that for 6-7 years now, and my hormones are perfectly in balance as of last week. And so that's pretty amazing to go, wow, my emotions are in check. My body's in check. I have been able to, you know, lose this weight, which I'm real like, you know, I know that's a sensitive topic, and I'm very, pro body positivity, pro health at any size. But for my body, I was able to release a lot of that holding that I was clinging on to from the grief of this death of my nephew. And it was like, once I kind of dealt with the emotional stuff, my body just came right into balance. I mean, it obviously took time, but just beautiful, beautiful transformation.
I expected the front part of your answer when you said you started to gain control of those emotions, that those physical symptoms really, you know, initiated a trajectory of resolution. I too had a diagnosis of endometriosis, and in my practice, it was something that I treated a lot of. And I mean this respectfully for people moving through this. I have never worked with someone, and never is a strong word, I've never worked with someone with endometriosis where when we actually start to address emotions and we look at mindset, that it doesn't have some manifestation on that disease. And it was really eye open. And there's other diseases where we see that too. But this was just one where, you know, when someone comes in and they're like, this is my diagnosis, I'm like, okay, great. I want you to know we're going to do a lot of hard work. And they're like, okay, I'll take whatever you want. I'm like, no. We're going to do a lot. We're going to do a lot of hard work. And I would share with them my experience. And I was okay if some people weren't in a place where they're like, listen, I don't want to do that. And that's okay.
Yeah.
But for women who are like, I'm here, I surrender. Like, let's just do it. We always saw a trajectory of improvement. And there's so many other facets that came into that. But
sure.
I have found that that is one condition in particular that can be perpetuated in a really profound way through the management of one's mindset and state of emotion. Yeah, go ahead.
Yep. Well, I was just going to say, like, what's so powerful about that and kind of what I found in my own journey. And this is, I really believe this is true, like in every kind of, you know, disease or any kind of health complication, is that if you look at the parts of the body that your symptoms are showing up in, and you look at the sort of symbolic nature of that particular area. So for me, endometriosis, the womb, right? So we're looking at that place where for a woman, we are growing, we are giving birth, it's kind of known as your creative center, that creation of life. And for me, when I looked at, okay, when did this all start? And I kind of rewound the clock to look at, when did this begin? Because there's an onset of this. There's a moment when we have these symptoms, things are creeping up. And I believe it happens before we get symptoms, but that's usually when we start to pay attention. That's usually when we start to listen. And so for me, it was like, oh, I developed this after the death of my nephew. And when we think about that center of the body, it represents motherhood. It represents femininity. It represents our sexuality. And all of those things were so repressed for me. My sexuality was deeply, deeply repressed. Trauma with that. There was obviously the death of my nephew. You look at the connection of creativity, of birth, of creation. And once I sort of got that link of like, it's no mistake where these situations creep up and begin to show themselves in the body. It was like, whoa, like so, so fascinating. And since then, like anytime I have anything that comes up, I'm looking at, you know, okay, where is this originating in the body, and what's the correlation of what that part of the body represents? Like if you think about in Chinese medicine, every single organ we have is related to an emotion. Lungs are related to grief. Kidney is fear. Liver is anger. And so there's this rich history of the emotions being connected to the body. And obviously in the work that you do, Megan, like, you know, this, you do this work every day. And I just love that you got to see like this amazing deep connection that sort of like shows like, yeah, every single time I've dealt with this particular issue, we've got some emotional stuff coming up. And I would probably venture to say that that's really true, maybe not like universally the same exact thing, but universally true for every ailment that comes up. There's some kind of emotional link there.
Yeah. And I feel like that's part of the brilliance of the body. So, you know, people will say, oh, stupid body, it's not doing what I want it to do. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Brilliant body, it's speaking to you in an entirely different language. But what it does force us to do is really start to look at emotions. And I think that as a society, we're getting better at this. But historically, like, you know, other than sort of static, I'm consistent in who I am emotionally at all times, we were kind of afraid of any emotion that was anything other than, you know, reliable and happy. And in fact, happy is always sort of referenced as like, oh, I just want my kids to be happy. I just want to be happy. Mm. Why do you think people are so afraid of the spectrum of emotions that I think are part of the human experience?
Well, you know, to be honest, I think it stems from childhood. And, you know, if you think about the generations before us, and like you said, I think it is getting better. I think there's more education around this now. But if you look at sort of what we learned from our family of origin, there were these overt or covert messages that emotions are bad. So, you know, you think about as a child, and, you know, little kids have temper tantrums, little kids get upset easily. They don't quite have the social construct yet to sort of know, like, when it's appropriate to share emotions or whatever. And so we get reprimanded. We get that quiet down, pipe down, get a hold of yourself. For men, they get that message of man up. You know, it's not good for a man to show emotion. It's not, you're not a real man if you cry. And then for women, we get the message that don't be too loud. Don't be too emotional because you won't be respected in the workplace. We even see that now as it relates to our time of the month and all the jokes or memes around women in the workplace, and they need to take time off when we have our period, when that comes back around. It's like, oh, well, here's a woman who's hysterical. And so we get this messaging that if we are quote unquote unhinged or uncontrollable in our emotions, we're not a healthy person. And I think that it kind of stems from childhood, that shame that goes along with if we get hurt or upset, if we lose a soccer game or a basketball game, and the messaging we're getting from our parents or our coaches, hey, suck it up. Then all of a sudden we learn, because we're not able to filter at that time, we learn, oh, I can't be upset. We know, we think about the extreme of emotions, like when somebody goes into full rage, we connect that with, I can't be angry. And so I think part of it is that messaging that we're getting. I think the other part is we're just simply not getting education from an early age as to what emotions are, how to feel them, having a vocabulary to express them. I love what you mentioned about sort of the happiness thing. It's like, if you think about our emotional vocabulary, it's like happy, sad, mad, lonely. I mean, there's not a huge range there. So I think that even we as adults now have a hard time understanding the nuances inside of ourselves. And then lastly, I think the reason why we're so afraid of our emotions is because we're scared of that, like, blow up moment. You know, you think about what we do as adults is we suppress and we numb and we press down those emotions really, really, really deep. And so what we think of as an emotion sometimes is what we think of when that emotion explodes. And so it's like, we don't actually even know, like, what real anger feels like. We may know what rage feels like, or we may know what, like, uncontrollable grief feels like, but we don't maybe know what sadness feels like. And so we sort of, like, have these extremes in our mind, and they feel really scary. Like, I know for me, when I was in my marriage after my nephew died, I didn't cry for like 6 or 7 years. And except for maybe in a movie, it was like, that was like a safe place to kind of let out some of that emotion. But for me, I was terrified. I was like, if I feel what's here, if I feel what's under the current, the underbelly of what's going on inside of my consciousness, they're going to have to put me in a loony bin. Like, they're going to call me crazy. I'm not going to be able to control it. I'll never be able to recover. I'll just lose my mind. And so there's a real fear around the inability to sort of process and control those emotions. And so all of this kind of makes us want to disassociate from the present and disassociate from what we're feeling and just sort of ignore or deny or stuff it. It's tricky. It's deep, and then it's perpetuated as adults as well.
And I couldn't help but sort of laugh to myself when you were like, we have three words for emotions, like sad, happy. Like we really do. I really do feel like we put our emotional health some days in the corner. Or, yeah. You know, we get into a rah-rah zone where we're it's totally okay to experience all of your emotions, but we also don't give people any framework on how to feel, but also feel safely to feel, but right. also not then experience their shame and not know where to go with that. And I would imagine that in your work that you are doing as a coach, for as a life coach and as a business coach, that giving people back control and vocabulary over their emotions is a significant part of your work. Is that, yeah. would you describe it that way?
Well, totally, because I think there's so much power in the presence of being with ourselves and being with our emotions. I mean, I kind of think of emotions as like instant feedback. I mean, it's really our roadmap to understand how we relate to the world. And so if you're in business and you're in a position where you're having to make a lot of decisions, whether you're an entrepreneur or in a position of leadership or whatever, you know, there are so many opportunities that are coming our way, so many things that we could say yes to or no to or whatever. And our emotions are a really like helpful lighthouse to kind of know when we're in flow, when we're in alignment with what it is that we're here to do, versus being in a place of obligation, being in a place of force, being in a place of hustle. But if you're kind of disconnected from your emotions, all of a sudden you find yourself in burnout mode. And I promise you, every single person, kind of like you were saying, like with your clients, with your patients, like never using that word never. And for me, it's the same. It's like, I have never worked with a woman in my coaching practice who is not burnout in some form or fashion, whether that is in her home life. And I work with female entrepreneurs, so especially in their work, they're burnt out. And to me, there's a direct correlation with burnout and their inability to feel their emotions. And so when they're disconnected from their body, when they're not able to go, whoa, hang on a second, I'm starting to feel exhausted, I'm starting to feel depleted, my needs aren't getting met here, you know, I'm giving out too much energy and not replenishing, then if you're not aware of that, if you don't have the conscious awareness around that, then you're going to keep saying yes, even though if you were to create this kind of new skill set, which is tapping into the emotional body, you would hear those warning signs before you got to the place of burnout. And so it's always part of the work that I do is helping to cultivate that self-awareness and check in with the self, like to become present and say, wait, let's pause here. Check in, ask myself, okay, what is it that I really need? Like that's something that I teach my clients from the get-go is kind of left hand on heart, close the eyes, take a couple deep breaths and just check in. Like, how am I feeling? What does it feel like in my body as a sensation? Is it hot? Am I nauseous? Do I feel like there's an elephant on my chest? Do I feel like I've got a knife going through my back? Is it tingling? Is it cool? Is it warm? Just kind of understanding like, oh, there's a physical sensation connected to how I'm feeling. And then once you kind of address with a loving presence, so meaning not judging it, not criticizing, sort of creating space to just let it be what it is. Like, I don't have to change this. I don't have to fix this, but I'm just acknowledging, I'm just observing what's happening right now, how I'm feeling, what that feels like in the body. Then we can pause to say, now, what do I need? What does this emotion need? What is asking for my highest attention right now? You know, it could be as simple as, I need to drink some water. I'm feeling dehydrated. But you didn't maybe feel that until you kind of connected with the body. And so it's so powerful and creates a lot of shifts in work and in family life once you start connecting to the emotions.
Yeah, it's so powerful because I read or posted or talked about this idea recently that feeling nothing does not mean feeling better.
Mm.
And I love what you've done here is you've kind of taken that pathway that we would traditionally follow, which is let's actually do whatever we can do lifestyle wise, pharmacologically to mitigate what you are feeling. And now you're moving people towards a place where you're like, let's lean into this entirely, because your power actually lies in the acknowledgement of your feelings, not the removal of them or putting them at bay. And I think it's so easy for us as entrepreneurs, probably, who have done a lot of this work, and I will speak for myself that I have a lot more work to do in this realm, to understand that piece. But what would you say to those people who are like, okay, it's still my coping mechanism to suppress my feelings, and I'll do this next decade when my kids leave the house or my company's at that next stage?
Yeah. Oh gosh, I hear this all the time. And I think before I answer that question, even though I think I can kind of wrap it in here with this, I think this numbing aspect is really important to kind of pause and acknowledge even deeper, because that's what we associate with health. Like, if I'm emotionally healthy, the assumption is I don't feel anything. Mm-hmm. So like, this is really reinforced through medication, like you're saying. Like, for me, I was on medication for my anxiety, and I was like, flatline, that's how I describe it. Like, totally just checked out. And I thought, God, well, this is better, right? This is better than having panic attacks. This is better than the anxiety. Like, this must be health. This must be what's normal. And unfortunately, as Brené Brown says, we cannot selectively numb. When we numb the dark, we also numb the light. And I think that comes into play when we look at, okay, let me just kind of grit my teeth. Let me just sort of like bear it and get through the next decade, and then I'll live. What's happening is we're not only closing ourselves off to the challenging or difficult emotions that we might be feeling, but we're robbing ourselves from the joy. We're robbing ourselves from the ability to experience that light, that happiness, that joy. And to me, kind of, I think that what we signed up for in being human is like experiencing the human experience. And that includes the rainbow of emotions. Like, simply being human means that I'm going to have a broad range of emotions. And that contrast, which is really beautiful, like if you think about like dark or light emotions or heavy or light emotions, the beauty in that is because of the contrast, we get to experience the joy. It's like we were experiencing this right now. It's like we've all been in lockdown, and how much more precious are those things that we haven't had for a long time? Getting our hair cut, you know, going to get a cup of coffee, eating out at a restaurant. It's like, oh my God, I never felt so good. And that's because we had the contrast. We didn't get that for a while. And so to me, if we want to, if the goal is, and this is what, I mean, I would say, like, especially my listeners or my audience, their goal is to live a life where they are present and fully alive. And I think the mistake is we think sometimes that to be fully alive, it means we're happy all the time, or we're just kind of in this like blissful state all the time. And I have to kind of correct a lot of my group coaching clients or my followers or my one-on-one coaching clients, like, hey, like, this isn't about trying to get to a place of perfection where we're not feeling any pain, or we're not in a place where, nothing affects us or we don't get triggered. It's actually the opposite. It's being willing to hold space for all of the emotions and seeing the benefit and the gift in all of them, and makes those times where we are in a state of joy or peace or feeling security, that those are even richer, and there's more gratitude for that. So to me, if I think about just sort of getting through life, it's like, oh, like, is that even really working? You know, it's like, how long can you really do that before something else goes, whether it's your marriage, whether it's your health, whether it's your mental state? I mean, there is a consequence for that. I mean, we're not made to sort of just shut it all off and just kind of go through the motions. I mean, that's just like, to me, that's prison. I mean, that's death. That's sort of like the walking dead. And that's kind of like, for me, where I got to that moment where I was like, there's got to be more to life than this. I hope that in this conversation, that becomes at least like a little crack open of the door of like, maybe there is more than what I'm living right now. Maybe there is a way where I could be more present and more alive.
So beautifully put. And I have found and believe strongly that entrepreneurism is a It's a spiritual journey as much as it is a business journey and personal journey, because it provides so many opportunities for us to step into those emotional states and frankly the contrast that you speak of. So I love the way that you brought all of those concepts together. As an ND and anthropologist, I have always been on the lookout for unique insights into my own health. While I have gadgets and trackers, nothing has provided me with the kind of actionable information I needed, like lifestyle genetic testing. DNA Labs is a lifestyle genetics testing company based in Toronto, Canada. Lifestyle genetics offers insight into the relationship between your genes and the lifestyle choices you have access to every day. The frontier of health is precision medicine. Informing yourself and your practitioner about your genetic blueprint provides personalized insight unattainable through any other sort of testing. Whether it is understanding how to reduce your risk for heart disease, Alzheimer's, or depression, selecting the most efficacious medications, or reducing side effects to those medications, or even designing a lifestyle plan and health optimization protocol that harnesses your unique potential, this is the mission of DNA Labs. Acquiring samples are as simple as a cheek swab and can be completed in the privacy of your own home. For public listeners in Canada and the U.S., until July 30th, you can receive a 15% discount for online orders when you enter Anthropology2020 at dnalabs.ca. For practitioners, you can access a pro panel and practitioner pricing by sending a message to contact@dnalabs.ca. Mary, I feel like this is a perfect place to transition the interview. I have a component in all the interviews that I do, and I call them our KPIs or key performance indicators. So just like we have them in our businesses, I believe that we have them in how we live our lives as well. So I've got a series of rapid fire questions coming your way.
Okay, let's do it.
You'll be okay. I know you can handle it. First one, what's the most impactful book or reading that you have digested during the pandemic?
So I have revisited a book again called Women, Food, and God by Janine Roth. It's a book that I'm consistently sort of going back, and I think it's just about all underlined now. But I've pulled that out again because I think everybody is sort of dealing with the quarantine 15, and we're having a lot of that shame coming up with our bodies. And so, and that happened for me as well, processing all the stress and the trauma of what's going on. And so I pulled that book out again, and it's just so helpful to give us perspective in our relationship to food and how we process our emotions.
What is the one thing you're most consistent with respect to your health?
Moving my body in some way. And I have all different ways of doing that, whether it's the gym, whether it is yoga, whether it's walking or hiking, but I would say I'm most consistent in moving my body.
What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
I am a rebel at heart. I am, if you meet me, you would never know that, but I really am like one of those people that loves variety, that loves change, and kind of seeks to do things unconventionally.
You know what's so fun about you saying that is when you opened, you're like, I was this recovering people pleaser, and I used to do the things I was supposed to do. And now you're like, actually, my true self is not that.
Yeah.
I love that. It's like evidence of that evolution. It's super powerful.
Totally.
What do you do for fun or play?
I love entertaining. So even though I've evolved a lot, I am Southern to my core. So I love having people over, and I have an amazing fire pit in my backyard, and I have great fires and make delicious cocktails and food. So I am like the modern day Martha Stewart.
I love it. And last question for you, Mary, entrepreneurism, are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
Ooh, that's a good one. I would say it's probably a little bit of both. I think we, at least for me and my family, my dad's an entrepreneur. For my sisters, including myself, we did not graduate college. We're college dropouts, and we witnessed how my dad did it. And I think it was definitely like a nurture situation. but I also think that certain people are bent that way, that they're just sort of like, they come into the world and they're just already thinking of ways to improve it from day one. So I think it's a little mix of both. I think it can be encouraged through family and culture, but I have an idea that I think that there's some people that are just more bent that way than others.
Mary Hyatt, it has been such a pleasure having this conversation. I'm super excited to dig even deeper into the Living Fully Alive podcast that you host. Where can we send people to learn more about you and the work you're putting into the world?
Yeah, so you can just go to my website, maryhyatt.com. All my info is there. The podcast links are there. My social links are there. And I'm super active on Instagram, so make sure to head on over there and follow me at Mary G, like Grace, Mary G Hyatt.
Amazing. Mary, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Megan.
The Ontropology Podcast is about leveling up your mindset, your health, and your business so you can maximize your impact in this world. To that end, we're going to begin with a new series of offerings to help you have that impact you've always dreamed of. Over on the Ontropology Podcast page, we're going to start doing live broadcasts of episodes. Sometimes these will be solo episodes, and sometimes these will be with guests. This is your opportunity to interact with us live as we are recording your favorite episodes. Adjacent to our Facebook page, we also have the Ontropology Collective, a free Facebook group with hundreds of fellow entrepreneurs just like you. In the Ontropology Collective, we're going to keep you up to date on upcoming masterclasses, interact daily, as well as have new offerings like our Badass Book Club. After a two-year hiatus, we are bringing it back. Our new April and May selections are going to be announced in the coming weeks, and we would love for you to participate in all of these new virtual offerings. I believe that when people have their health, they can change the world. That is what inspired us to start this podcast in the first place. And that is what is inspiring us to keep going. I'm so appreciative of all of you. Give us a like over on Apple iTunes and come and join us in the collective. We'll see you there.